Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Home First Finance Company India Limited Q4 and FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Kayal, Investor Relations Head. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Kayal.
Thank you, Nirav. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope that all of you and your families are safe and healthy. On behalf of Home First Finance, I extend a very warm welcome to all participants on Q4 and FY22 financial results discussion call. I am Manish Kayal, and I look after the Investor Relations. Today on the call, I am joined by our MD and CEO, Mr. Manoj Viswanathan, and CFO, Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari. I hope everyone has had an opportunity to go through our investor deck and press release that we have uploaded yesterday on exchanges and on our website. We have also uploaded our Excel version of our fact sheet on our website and request you to have a look. With this introduction, I hand over the call to Manoj. Over to you, Manoj.
Thank you, Manish. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to address all of you after completing one full year as a listed company. FY22 was a successful year for Home First, and I will take this opportunity to share the highlights with you. Firstly, we crossed two important milestones. We crossed rupees 5,000 crores of AUM, and we also crossed rupees 2,000 crores of annual disbursement for the first time. Moving on to other highlights, we had our highest ever quarterly disbursements of 641 crores. An increase of 12.5% on a quarter-on-quarter basis and 42% on a year-on-year basis. There is further improvement in one-day past due and 30-day past due levels. One-day past due has improved to 5.3% from 6.5%. 30-day past due has improved to 3.7% from 4.7%. And our gross stage 3 stands at 2.3%, and that is down 30 basis points from 2.6 in December. And this is based on the post-RBI circular of November 21. Prior to this, adjusted for the RBI reclassification, the numbers actually stands at 1.3% in March 22, which is down from 1.7% in December 21, an improvement of 40 basis points. March 22 stage 3 also includes the rupees 44 crores, which is actually in buckets which are less than 90 days past due. But they have been included in NPA due to the asset reclassification norms as per the RBI notification dated 12th November 2021. However, the said change does not have any material impact on the financial results. We have been rated AA- by India Ratings with a stable outlook. This is a testimony to our strong risk processes, asset quality and strength of balance sheet, and also highlights the comfort drawn from the economic and sectoral recovery from COVID and strong growth momentum of the sector. Physical branches have gone up to 80 from 76, and total distribution points have gone up to 200 from 187 on a quarter-on-quarter basis. On digital initiatives, our customer app continues to enjoy high usage, with 80% of our customers now registered on the app, compared to 76% in quarter 3, FY22. Payments and service requests made via the app in quarter 4, FY22, have also gone up by 82% and 42% respectively on a year-on-year basis. 48-hour turnaround time for a loan approval improved further to 92% of the customers from 90% in quarter 3. Our e-onboarding initiatives have been received well, with e-stamp adoption in 65% of the cases in quarter 4. And for the full year, that number is 41%. E-NACH adoption is 51% of loans in quarter 4. And for the full year, it is 38%. And e-sign adoption is in 20% of the loans in quarter 4. And for the full year, 16%. This shows that there is an increasing trend in this adoption of these digital initiatives. With this, I would now like to hand over the call to Nutan to take you through the financials. Nutan, over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, all. I will take you through our financial performance. We continue to stay focused on our key operating metrics with an intention to deliver mid-teen ROE in a few years. Our NIM has expanded from 5.8% in quarter 3 to a very strong 6.4% in quarter 4, coming mainly from sustained spreads and further optimization of cash on the balance sheet. Net interest income has gone up by 51.6% on a year-on-year basis and 15.6% on a QOQ basis. We did lower direct assignment in quarter four as a liquidity strategy, and we continue to have a robust demand for our portfolio of assets. OPEX to assets stands at 3% for the quarter, an increase of 20 basis points. This is in line with our expectations. As guided earlier, we expect this ratio to remain in the range of 3% to 3.2% going ahead as we focus on expansion. Accordingly, cost to income was 35.7% in quarter four compared to 33% in quarter three. Our Q4 PPOP stands at 66 crores. Credit cost was lower at 0.2. Our ECL provision stands at 1.1% of the total principal outstanding. We continue to be conservative with the provisions. Our provision coverage ratio stands at 47.1%. Prior to the RBI reclassification, this is at 83.6%. Our adjusted profit after tax is 48 crores for the quarter, a growth of 4.9% on a QOQ basis. Moving to liquidity and borrowing, as Manoj mentioned, India Ratings has assigned a AA- with a stable outlook to our long-term ratings in this quarter. The company continues to have a diversified and cost-effective long-term financing sources. We have a healthy borrowing mix with 45% of borrowings from banks, 27% from NHB refinance, 23% from direct assignments. We continue to have zero borrowings through commercial paper. Our cost of borrowing is flat at 7.2%. Our marginal cost of borrowing for quarter four was at 5.8% due to drawdown from NHB. Excluding NHB, our cost of borrowing on an incremental basis is 7.5%. Moving to capital, our total CRAR stands at 58.6% with Tier 1 at 58%. Our March 22 net worth is 1574 crores. Our quarter four ROA stands at 4% flat quarter on quarter. Our annualized ROE stands at 12.5% for Q4. Our book value per share is 179.6 as of March 22. With these details, I open the floor for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Karthik Chulappa from Buena Vista Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Good afternoon, team, and congrats on a very good quarter. So I have three questions, but before that, just a housekeeping clarification. There has been some reclassification of some P&L items for previous quarters within interest income and other operating income, although the total hasn't changed. Any quick thoughts on what drove this reclassification?
So, Karthik, there are different ways to classify some of the income items. Some of the auditors differ it in a certain way, and as you know, we've had a change of auditors in this year, and that's primarily led to this classification. We also understand this is how the market is also doing it. So it's largely alignment and no other thing.
Okay, got it. Okay, my first question is basically on the BT out that we saw in the fourth quarter of 6.5%. Although it could be a quarter-end phenomenon, could you give some color on to whom was this specifically BT'd out? And typically, what were the kind of rate differential that you couldn't match and hence you basically thought it fit that the account can leave the company?
BT outs generally happen to the larger banks. Nationalized banks and some of the large housing finance companies. So those are the typical companies that do the BT out from us. Rates are fairly lower than ours. So typically the market rates for a prime customer, which is typically in the 7.5 to 8.5 in that range. So the differential is generally high, and so it's difficult to retain these customers. But this is nothing different that we have seen in the last 10 years. It's similar to the kind of, you know, I mean, it's the same companies to whom customers are going, and the same rate differential that has been there for the last several years.
Got it. So ideally what we should think about is the BT out for the year is going to be in a 5 to 6% range with a skew towards fourth quarter. That's how we should even think about this going forward, right?
Yeah, I guess 4 to 5% range with some skews and you know, like in the last quarter and so on. So that's generally what we see also. If you see historically also, there is a skew in, I mean, yes, not even in the last quarter, especially in March, there is generally a skew. You know, for example, now in April it has come down. So that's generally the trend.
Great. My second question is, if I look at the securitization volumes, on a year-on-year basis, it's probably just down 9 to 10%, but the gain or the income that we have booked is probably down even more, which means the yields are down. What would explain that?
So, Karthik, the yields are flat on a year-on-year basis almost. Why would you say that the securitization volumes are down? Because we've done securitization in quarter four as well. Last year we did 300 crores and this year we've done 465.
The volume was 1159, whereas this quarter is 1050. So the volume is down like 10%, right?
Yeah, so that is very marginal. So that really, you know, comes down to liquidity strategy at the end of the company and what pricing we want to do in the transactions. It's nothing, it's business as usual, nothing more to read in that.
Okay. The last one that I have is now we ended the quarter with a marginal cost of borrowing of 7.5%, excluding the NHB. Given the out of cycle rate hike that we have saw today, which is quite sizable at about 40 basis points, as far as your borrowing from banks are concerned, whether public sector banks or private sector banks, with what lag or how soon will this rate hike start reflecting in your cost of borrowing as well?
So there are three steps to this, Karthik. The first step is the repo-linked borrowing, which is small for us. The second step is MCLR-linked, so the MCLR for the banks has to go up. And the third step is that the reset dates are different across all borrowing lines. So even for a particular bank, there will be multiple reset lines based on the drawdown dates. So the whole cycle is a 12-month cycle. However, some of the repo-linked loans, which is a very small percentage for a book, could be immediate.
Okay, got it. I have a few follow-up, but I'll probably come back in the queue. Wish you and the team all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity and congratulations on the great set of numbers. So my question was with respect to today's development on rates. So how do you see that impacting our spreads and NIMs over the next 1 year? We've been guiding for 4.75 to 5% of spread in a steady state environment. So do we see any challenge there?
No, we expect the rate high. I mean, as Nutan mentioned just now, it's there will be several steps before which the rate high gets completely passed on. We expect it to be gradual over the next 3 to 6 months. And so as such, we don't see as the rate hike gets passed on to us, we will also pass it on to customers. We don't see much of a challenge in retaining the spreads. Because the demand on the ground is very strong and customers generally recalibrate their requirements, there is a marginal rate change. So we don't really see muting of demand or subduing of demand because of the rate hikes.
And then secondly, like just in connection to this question, so we've seen the loan book mix also changing, which is broadly aiding the spreads and NIMs. Like we've seen the self-employed share increase and we've also seen the non-HL share increase. So do we see this change picking up pace over the next, say, 4 to 5 quarters? Because that will also help us in broadly maintaining spread and NIMs.
There are, I think, two, three levers. One is that, we have always competed in large markets and, in very competitive markets with larger players. And, our expansion plans over the next 2 to 3 years are largely in smaller towns. So as we go deeper and move into smaller towns, we should be able to, sustain the spreads, that we have been holding till now. Secondly, as you mentioned, we have always guided that there will be a creeping increase in loan against property and, high yielding products like that over a period of time. As you know, as our distribution increases, customers get more comfort, there is more word of mouth and so on. That is likely to be, and it is a creeping increase. As you can see, at an AUM level, we are still at 7% on loan against property. It will take time before it starts moving up, but yes, that is another factor which is in our favor. We have headroom for growing on those kind of products in the coming quarters. Thirdly, on the self-employed side, again, it's a very, very, marginal increase. I would not read too much into it. But when we expand into smaller towns, there is likelihood of the self-employed sector going up slightly more than what has been there historically. But as of now, it's still in the 70-30 range, which we have always maintained.
Got it. And then one last clarification. So I suppose 90% of our loans, housing HL category loans, are linked to variable rate. Is that the right number?
Yeah. All our loans are floating rate loans. So if we get a rate increase, we should be able to pass on the rate increase. There is a small portion that is NHB refinance, which is actually a fixed which is a fixed rate loan for the customer, but that it's also a fixed rate for us from NHB side. So on both sides it's fixed. So again, there is no interest rate risk over there. But otherwise, 90% of the loans are floating rate. So we'll be able to pass on the increase.
And what is the limit that we have from the NHB in terms of funding?
Limit from NHB in terms of?
Pricing, is it?
No, in terms of funding, like how much, like I think they would be having the total exposure that they could take.
We they have some internal formulae, based on the net worth of the company, etc. Our understanding is that we have sufficient headroom over there.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much, and good luck for the next quarter, sir.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations for good set of numbers. So first question is on securitization spread. So now maybe was there a benefit in terms of the spreads at which we have booked the securitization income in past 18 odd months due to lower rates? And in this rising interest rate environment, would we see pressure out there, or maybe when banks increase the MCLR, would there be any unwinding of the benefit in this entire securitization income?
So, Kunal, really the question is in two parts. First, on the new book, and second, on the existing book. So let me take it one by one. On the new book, the spreads will be in line with our on-book spreads. That is what we have seen for our existing transactions, and that is what we will see going forward. There is no pricing arbitrage, or from tactically it can differ from quarter to quarter, but largely around the same spread. Coming to the second part of the question on existing, we've been doing assignment now for over 5 years. We have done the model to see what is the risk and at what point does the curve starts to give us more hit in the P&L. We are not forcing that because that, given our securitization at a much higher price earlier, we still continue to carry that benefit. So we are not really forcing a risk on the P&L from an existing securitization book also.
Okay, but maybe when rates were down, in fact, that benefit would not have entirely got unwound, and now maybe again we will start seeing the impact. That's not the case. In fact, we are still sitting with some of the benefit, and can continue.
Because on a blended basis, we are still higher on the overall cost of the securitization over the 5 years.
Okay. And till what rate would it be actually guarded? So maybe another 50, 70 odd basis points. How much can it take the further?
Around 8%.
Okay. 8% is what it is guarded to. Okay. Okay. And secondly, in terms of this entire repricing, so the way I understand is maybe we will see the cost of borrowings getting repriced, then we will pass it on. And since 90% is variable, in fact, there would not be too much of a lag which might happen out there. So that would be a clear understanding. Maybe whenever we see our borrowing cost going up, we will be revising our rate.
So we'll plan the passing on of the rate increase in a gradual manner so that there is not too much lag.
Okay. And given the way kind of BT outs have been there even with this rate, so when maybe do you think that maybe in terms of maybe the potential to increase compared to the increase in the borrowing cost could be lower, because maybe then again we have seen this kind of a BT rates of more than 6% odd, then I think it would further aggravate if we further hike it. So how should one read that? Yeah.
Not actually, again, there not too much to be read into it, because our rates increase, our market rates also will increase. So the lenders who are offering low rates, they'll also have to increase their rates. And generally, there are both schools of thought, but generally speaking, when the rates are very low, like what we saw in the last, let's say, 18 months or so, then customers get more excited because, they see rates like 6.5, 7.5, etc. But as rates trend up and, they go towards 8.5, etc., the excitement is a little more subdued. So I would say nothing much to be read into the BT out as far as the rate increase is concerned.
Okay. Thanks, and all the best. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Congratulations on good set of numbers, sir. Sir, my question is on the branch addition, right? When you're adding branches, with what lag do they contribute to AUM growth? And second is, how is the, if you just have to split between newly added branches and the vintage ones, how is the growth differential? Is there a significant growth rate differential between the new ones and the old ones? And hence, can the growth rate further accelerate? That's my question.
Yes, so our branch addition strategy, we basically follow a strategy where, we start business in a location and there is a kind of virtual setup which is created and they start generating business. And then once the virtual setup reaches an AUM of about 10 crores, or 10 to 20 crores, you can say, we set up a branch. So that's our strategy. So, branch, that from the moment it opens in the system, the AUM starts increasing. But when the physical branch gets added, the AUM, there will be a sudden AUM jump of, you can say, 10 to 20 crores, because, at that point only we add a physical branch. As far as the difference between new and old branches are concerned, yes, that is more of a base effect. So for smaller branches, the AUM growth, it appears higher because of the lower base effect. Broadly, the AUM growth in the initial years, the one first couple of years will be in the region of 75 to 100%. From the second year or from the third year to fifth year, it will be in the region of about 30 to 50%. And fifth year onwards, it will be more like 25 to 30%.
Right, but vintage branches are also growing at the pace which the company has reported, or are they at a slower pace?
20 to 30% they would be growing at, yeah.
Okay. So FY23, how will the branch addition be, sir? First half, second half?
How many? It's a well-paced expansion plan. So every quarter we are looking at adding about 4-5 branches, physical branches I'm talking about. But the virtual branches and digital locations will keep coming up in larger numbers.
Right. And most of the OPEX and employee cost increases on the back of this expansion, geography expansion, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. Or was there any one-off or variable pay or anything related on the back of good performance? Anything?
No, nothing like that. It is all basically people addition and, you know, the expenses related to related to compensation. For example, last quarter we had some expense related to ESOPs. So it's all related to compensation and people only.
Okay, sure. Thank you. That was my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Preet Jain from Daily Stock. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. So I had only one question. So that the interest rates are going to go up. So what do you think that will it decrease the demand for housing finance in the coming quarter?
Not really. We are, you know, see, we are dealing with customers who are genuine end users, and you know, the planning for purchasing or building a house happens over a long period of time. Something like rate increase generally does not, mute the demand or subdue the demand. We have not seen that even in the past. So we are, and the demand on the ground continues. So we are not seeing, seeing any impact on that.
Okay, okay. So what will be your guidance for this next financial year in terms of revenue or new loans to be created in this financial year?
Yeah, so we are at a disbursement run rate of about 200 crores a month now. We are basically looking at an AUM growth of about 30%.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranav Mehta from Value Plus Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, and congratulations for a great set of numbers. Just one question on your asset quality. So if we look at our 1 DPD number or 30 DPD numbers, they have shown significant improvement on a quarter-on-quarter basis. But we have not seen the similar level of improvement in our gross stage 3, which is down by, you know, just 30 bits. So what is leading to this kind of sticky 90 plus or a gross stage 3 assets, and are some of these bad loans like concentrated in few geographies or something like that? Can you just explain this?
Sure. So if you look at the 90 days past due number, that has also come down by about 40 basis points, right? I mean, I think you are looking at the post RBI classification number, which is 2.6 coming down to 2.3. If you look at the trends as per the previous classification, and the numbers have come, the NPA has come down from 1.7 to 1.3%. So a 40 basis points decrease. And this is more of a lagged effect, right? So as the 1 plus and 30 plus reduces, the NPA also will keep reducing. So which is what, if you remember last two quarters also, we were saying that, you know, there has been a decrease in a one day past due and 30 day past due, and NPA should start reducing. And you saw a substantial reduction in quarter four of 40 basis points. So this trend will continue. As far as the post RBI classification number is concerned, actually a lot of these customers are actually, you know, the NPA customers are paying additional installments and coming below 90 plus, but they also have to be, they have to remain classified as 90 plus till they come to zero. So that will remain for some time, because, you know, this is all an effect of COVID that we are seeing. It's going to take time for these customers to actually make those additional payments and come out of, completely out of delinquency. But otherwise, yeah, very, on, you know, if you see on a regular basis, we are actually at pre-COVID levels in terms of collections. If you see collection efficiency, so practically all customers are paying one installment, the collection efficiency numbers are all at pre-COVID levels.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pradav Gupta from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Can you talk about the co-lending partnership that we had with with Union Bank and how that is progressing, whether we are seeing the expected volumes, that we had planned, and how, just an update on this. That's my first question.
Yes, we are making decent progress, but we're still grappling with certain teething issues. So I think this quarter we should be able to make more substantial progress. So I guess next quarter call we should be able to hear some more positive news on that. We have made some progress. We have booked, onboarded certain transactions, but yet to kind of pick up pace.
Okay, just to follow up on this, when you say teething issues, is it more on that probably the tech and integration side, or is it the kind of customers that Union Bank wants us to source? Where are we facing these issues in this partnership?
So you can say a bit of both, because we are an affordable housing housing finance company, very very embedded in that scheme of things. So it requires a little bit of change of culture and process on the ground level to retrain our people to originate more formal customers. So that is one, that is a struggle at one end. And the other end, yes, there are some issues with related to tech and, integrating the process with the bank, etc. So on both ends, we are, addressing those issues.
Right. So my second question is on the expansion. So typically we've always been in larger markets with a denser population, and now we are expanding to relatively smaller towns and cities. How different will the branch structure or the branch, the staffing, how different will it be, and how different will the cost structures be for these branches that we open in relatively smaller towns and cities from here on?
So we are not putting up physical branches in very small towns. It's more of access and the presence at those small towns. So the loans will still get booked at the nearest large, physical branch. More and more we are seeing that there is not too much difference in terms of the kind of people or, costs, etc., which between a tier one or a tier two town and a larger town. So I would say that it is not very significant. Yes, there may be some differences, some slight local, local flavor, etc. But nothing significantly different, from what we have been doing.
Okay, sure. Thank you so much. That will be all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chandrasekhar Sridhar from Fidelity International. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I have a few questions. Manoj, one is just where are we in just terms of the upper limits of yields which we can charge the customers, the context being that if sort of rates start moving higher, just how easy would it be for us to pass on while sort of, trying to maintain, keeping the asset quality which we are, or does this get mitigated by a mix and distribution? That's question one. Second was, I noticed that the share of 1.5 to 2.5 million loans is gradually been picking up. Slightly higher ticket size has gone up by 3 percentage points over the last 1 year. Just what's driving that? Third is just, as you go deeper, just in terms of distribution, does the whole centralized underwriting model work, or will it continue to work, or do you sort of have to move a little more decentralized? And a couple of questions for Nutan, just maybe any conversations which you've had post after the ratings upgrade on what happens on the cost of funds, and just maybe if you could remind me lastly on at what point in time do we need to start having 25% of our incremental borrowings from the market? Thank you.
Sure. I didn't actually get the second question properly.
You're saying 1.5 million to 2.5 million ticket size is picking up.
Oh, ticket size.
So that's the one, Chandra, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, yeah. The share of loans has actually gone up in the 1.5 to 2.5 million.
Yeah. So First question was on yield and what would be, you know, highest point which we can reach, etc., as the prices go up. So I think there are two things here. So what will happen? One is that, see, we operate in a range, right? We operate in a range between 11% to 13.5%, and the blended rate comes to probably 12.7% to 13%. So I think what will also happen when as rates go up is that, you know, the floor will keep going up, right? So where we are now able to offer at 11% or 11.5% to certain customers, that number will go up, and, you know, that band will become narrow. So that will bridge the rate increase, and spread compression to some extent. And secondly, like you said, you know, the mix, we have a lot of headroom to, change the mix and, get some yield out of that. So I think both these things will help in compensating the rate increase. On the ticket size, it's more of a secular increase. It's not any conscious decision to originate higher. And I think some loans that we originated under the co-lending program are also there in this. So probably showing up over there. I mean, I think through next quarter, we'll probably show it separately. On the centralized underwriting fees, no, we don't have any second thoughts on that. Absolutely, it's going great. As you can see from our turnarounds, which are improving every quarter, and we are actually deriving the benefits of centralized underwriting now. So we are very, I mean, we are strong believers, and we are, also getting the benefits out of it. So we don't plan to localize it at all. And in fact, with a lot of this, information coming, in a digital format, our ability to underwrite better through a centralized mode is becoming stronger. So we intend to continue that. Rating update, I'll hand over to Nutan.
So, Chandra, on cost of borrowing post ratings, firstly, we have a split rating right now. So we have a AA minus stable outlook rating from India Ratings, and we have a A+ positive outlook from ICRA. So the first step is really to align these ratings. We have started the work, so we'll need some time there. Once the alignment happens, that's when the direct benefit from the banks will start to pass on. Having said that, you would have seen the T-bill and the G-Sec has been increasing. Despite that, we've been able to hold on to the cost of borrowing. So the overall comfort and ability to price well continues, and it is only going to help us as the alignment, etc., comes through. Your second question on 25% incremental borrowing through NCDs, yes, we have signed the initial declaration with the stock exchanges, so it is applicable to us as well. There is a block of 2 years which is allowed. We are not very worried about it given the fact that we've already started the process of NCDs to mutual funds last quarter itself. We are not looking too concerned on this aspect.
Does that mean that from this year itself you would start borrowing
from
the market 25%?
Yes, the incremental portion.
Sure. Okay, yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Mehta from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on the strong performance and thank you for taking my question. So firstly, on growth in two key markets for us, Maharashtra and Karnataka, so combined it is about 24-25% of the book. But I see them growing, significantly below the overall portfolio growth. In certain quarters, there has been no growth as well. So when do we see things reversing in these two, large markets for us?
So Maharashtra, as far as the Karnataka is concerned, we are largely present, only in, the larger towns. So which is, at the moment, we are basically present in Bangalore. We are in the process of expansion. In Maharashtra, you will start seeing, progress because now we are expanding into, smaller towns of Maharashtra. So you should start seeing the numbers move up. We are making progress in Maharashtra also, but I think the progress in South certain other markets is much sharper. So it's kind of taking away from the progress we are making in Maharashtra.
Okay. And one question is on the strategy of going deeper. So how would it influence our property profile, your risk associated with property underwriting, and also our ticket size?
So from a risk perspective, see, we are not going into very, very small, very, very small habitations. So, you know, we are present in 200 towns and, you know, our ambition is to go to or reach by 400 towns in the next 2 to 3 years. So these would be, in the overall scheme of things in the country, these will be fairly large towns. It's just that from our perspective, we have potential to expand in another 200 towns. So we are not really going to very small villages with small, small population, etc. So any location that we go to will be a fairly large town with at least a 2 to 3 lakh kind of a population, with a demand for at least 300 to 400 loans a month. That's the kind of town we are talking about. And given the way, the kind of country is changing, with trends in smaller towns, actually progressing very fast in terms of digital adoption, etc. We don't see much of a difference in the way we operate, in the next 200 towns compared to 200 towns where we are already present. So we are not seeing that. I mean, this year we have added almost 100 towns. We are not seeing any major change in the way we are operating.
Okay. And what are write-offs in the quarter?
Around 2 crores. Those were some short collections, some short recovery.
Basically partial, these are partial write-offs from, properties that have been, sold to settled accounts.
Okay. And you had spoken about certain accounts last quarter wherein you would want to, kind of resolve them. And that would lead to, or that would entail certain write-offs. So is that pool still lying? I mean, I'm sure there is a certain pool which can also then entail such kind of provisions in the coming quarter.
So this is an ongoing number. This quarter we have resolved more than 200 loans, or rather sold to more than 200 properties. So what you're seeing is a number from that. So in certain cases we would have incurred loss or I recovered an amount which is lower than our principal, so that's the loss that you're seeing, which is the 2 crores.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Abrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. The first one is on the co-lending partnerships that you talked about. So more of an academic question. Given that, co-lending partnerships will entail both a fee income as well as some spreads, typically the way we compute our NIMs is as a percentage of the total assets. And given that large part of it will be off balance sheet under the co-lending arrangement, can that mean that, disbursements under the co-lending model can actually be accretive to the margins, given that you will continue to book the spreads that you're making in your maybe interest income item while the assets will continue to remain off balance sheet?
Yes, Abhijit, it will definitely be accretive to the overall margin profile. Whether we will be able to book it in interest income or other income line needs to be seen. My understanding, it should be in other income line because those assets are not on the balance sheet. And interest income reflects the income from the assets that are on the balance sheet.
Right. Thank you. The next question that I had, Nutan, is on, again, has been touched upon by a few participants in this call. But if I look at the absolute number of stage 3, which also includes your RBI NPAs, that number has not moved much. It's from maybe 1 or 2 crores come down to about 1.5 crores on an absolute basis. So one of the other things that we were kind of hearing all through the quarter is, some of the HFCs have been leveraging a few of the ARCs. So basically selling some of the old legacy NPAs to ARCs, and which has helped them exhibit a good improvement in their asset quality. And Manoj, sometime back, was also referring to in the last question that you resolved more than 200 properties during 4Q. So my expectation was that, given that it is a little easier to kind of enforce SARFAESI in mortgages, probably the improvement would have been better. I'm talking about more about the absolute levels of the gross stage three numbers.
Abhijit, let me just break this down, so then you will be able to appreciate the progress that we have made. The December number is about 102 crores, right? The breakup of that was actually 68 crores in actual NPAs. When I say actual NPAs, it is actually the customer is a 90 days past due, and 34 crores was, you know, below 90 days. This is because of the RBI classification, these customers had to be classified as NPA. That was the breakup of the 102 crores of December, which is 68 and 34, and which is basically 1.7% and 0.9%, so total was 2.6%. Now, when you come to the breakup for this quarter, that number is 101, the total, and the breakup is 57 and 44. Okay, so that 68 crores, which was actually in NPA last quarter, has actually come down to 57 crores. So there's 11 crore improvement in absolute number as far as the real NPA is concerned. And that number, the percentage number, I mean, equivalent of that is 1.3%, which was 1.7% last quarter. So although on the top you're seeing it almost similar, 102 and 101, if you break it down, the real NPA has gone down by 11 crores this quarter, and which is, so, you know, these are all actual improvements because, you know, these are customers who are getting rolled back to lower buckets. And gradually we'll be able to pull them out completely from, you know, completely from the NPA. So that's the improvement, actual improvement of about 0.3, that is 30 basis points. And if you see the 30 to 90 has also reduced to 32 crores. You know, you can see that 30-day past due, the overall improvement is about 40 crores, but out of which the 30 to 90 number is improved by 32 crores. So that is a 0.7 or 70 basis points improvement. So those are actually the real improvements in the you know, delinquency. So and as you rightly said, yes, property is there, and now it's you know, market is good, so we are able to resolve and sell off the properties and clear off the loans.
Couple of more points, Abhijit. So you refer to the point of ARC. So we have not been using any ARC sell down mechanism. The entire resolution is being done entirely by the company at a loan by loan basis, engaging with each customer. The second point that you mentioned on usage of SARFAESI. So our understanding is that SARFAESI cannot be used for rollback cases. So only if the customer is in this whole classification of NPA is only for financial purposes. If you go back to the 15th February circular of RBI, it clearly says that for civil purposes, these customers will not be marked as NPA. And hence, for this entire bunch of 44 crores or the rollback case, we cannot use SARFAESI.
Okay, so thank you, I mean, to both of you for this explanation. But from what I understood is, I mean, like you rightly said, I mean, SARFAESI cannot be used for rollback cases, because given that this NPA circular itself has been postponed to September, I guess they're technically not NPAs anymore. You can't technically tag them as NPAs.
And even
for the rollback cases.
Even from 1st October, there is a line in the circular which says that for CRILC reporting, the old rules continue. So even then, you cannot impose SARFAESI on the rollback cases. Is the current understanding. We will see how the market evolves.
Got it. And this 10 crore increase that we have seen in your RBI NPA pool, in other words, those people who had rolled back or are still less than 90 DPD on the date of the reporting, which is to still suggest that, I mean, customer discipline would need to improve. There are still customers on the margin who are slipping into NPA. I'm talking about this circular. There's still people who are slipping into NPA and would kind of need better credit discipline.
But more than slipping in now, actually, customers are slipping down. So, you know, now their customers are coming and coming forward to make more payments than what is required. More than one payment per month, so that they can come back to zero. So we will see probably more movement into this, out of the, you know, real NPA and going into the, you know, lower buckets. This phenomenon we'll probably see for the next 3 to 6 months, and then gradually these customers will come out of NPA fully.
Got it. And my last question was for Nutan again, I mean, on the borrowing costs. So you did kind of earlier during the call said that a small proportion of our borrowings are repo rate linked. And I'm assuming the remaining will be all MCLR linked.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess, I mean, all of us will now kind of try to understand what could be the proportion of, I would say, repo rate hikes in this fiscal year. But, I mean, having said that, what is your sense, Nutan, right now? I mean, if there has been a 40 basis points kind of a repo rate hike, what could be the quantum of the borrowing cost increase that you could see against a 40 basis points kind of a repo rate hike?
So against the 40 basis points in the next two quarters, I would think about 50% will pass on once the MCLR, etc., increases and the whole flow is done. But that will be gradual. This is not the only increase that we will see this year. There will be more increases. So what we are really gearing forward towards is an overall increase of 50-70 basis points, and then how do we build growth and business around it. So that's really the focus area for this year also, Abhijit.
Great. And I think, I mean, you're still kind of shooting for this 30% kind of an AUM growth. I ask this because, I mean, when I asked about this co-lending partnerships that you have, and I'm assuming you're already working on some other co-lending partnerships. So even in the face of, I mean, co-lending arrangements kind of leading to higher disbursements in the future and accruing to your AUM growth, you're still thinking that will lead to about a 30% kind of a growth in AUM.
Right, Abhijit, see, if you look at our disbursal run rate, it is already 200 crores plus, right? So if you just extrapolate that and just add maybe a slight growth towards the second half, we should be able to get to the 30% growth levels.
Right, Manoj. Thank you so much, and wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Maheshwari from Ambit Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you, Manoj and Nutan, for just one question, Manoj. Can you give some highlight on the connector, which is acting as a sourcing for Home First Finance? What is the run rate currently, and how we are diversifying the further sourcing channel for Home First just to grow in line of 30% AUM growth and the branch expansion, which you told at the opening remark?
Yeah. So connectors, currently the number of active connectors per quarter is in the region of about 1,500 connectors. So the run rate typically, I mean, or the increase to that number will be about 100-200 per quarter. And we also parallelly work on the productivity of the connectors. So currently, they are able to generate probably, say, two loans a month. So we try to push that number also up to maybe three, etc. So both these things, there's a lot of work going on. We have made the connector app more easy to use. We have built custom notifications in the app, etc. So it's ongoing work to engage and keep the connectors more engaged. As far as alternative channels are concerned, we have direct marketing, which is done by the branch, which had taken a bit of a backseat during COVID because we could not do any activities. That is now coming back. So last quarter, we saw that number going up of customers coming through direct marketing by the branch. We are also seeing some progress. This year, we anticipate progress on the digital and alliance channels, which have been at the 3% kind of mark for the last few quarters. We anticipate again a movement over there, because now things, I mean, again, it was slightly hampered because of COVID and the ability to, and people working from home and so on and so forth. But now everything being back to normal, we anticipate upward movement on those channels as well. So overall, we would say we are comfortable with the 70-30 kind of a ratio at the moment, 70% coming through connectors and 30% through the other channels. And we are working on increasing the productivity of all the channels.
Manoj, that's quite helpful. But also, can you say market specific that where there is a stiff competitive intensity, for an example, in markets like Vadodara, where Home First Finance gets the lead in terms of ranking, whether it's the third or fourth, when the overall DSAs are giving the leads to the respective players in the ticket size where the respective company wants to grow. So can you give some flavor that how different regions are behaving and whether your ranking in terms of preference for respective DSA has been improving quarter or year by year?
See, again, we are, you know, our approach is a little different. Our approach is to ensure that in our segment, we are the preferred option. Where customers have informal incomes or they're facing some other issue, or some other challenge in getting a loan from a larger lender. So we should be the first, we should be the preferred option for the connector to pass the lead to us. So that's really been our approach, and we have been fairly successful. I would not be able to tell you specifically, I mean, the location that you pointed out, Baroda, is a very, very competitive, rate sensitive market with a lot of formal segment customers. Difficult to make a location specific comment, but generally our approach is that in affordable segment, we should be the preferred option for the connector. And they have enough reasons or enough reasons to prefer us, because we are very easy to deal with. Everything can be done through the connector app. They can keep track of their status. So lots of benefits for the connector as well as the customer. So for them to push our product.
And just a second question, Manoj. There are few customers in your overall pool where they are a salaried person also, and at the same time they are running their act as in self-employed customers, a mix of pool, because in rural areas we find those areas are in St. Neighbor.
These are characteristics of affordable housing customers, right? So, you know, and if they go with this kind of profile to a larger lender, they would probably get declined because they would not understand, you know, that somebody could be, you know, working. So there are many customers, for example, who work in factories and on weekends they do, work on a self-employed basis. And that's a real income. But, you know, banks and larger lenders don't recognize that. And that's really where we come in. And we understand these customers better. And we are a preferred option for these customers.
Then where you categorize those customers, Manoj?
Whichever is the predominant income. So if the customer is a formal salaried customer, we would categorize them as a salaried customer. So our categorization is based on the behavior and predominant income. So if a customer is formal salaried, which is where he's getting a salary credit in the bank, then their behavior is typically like a salaried customer. So we categorize them as a salaried customer.
Okay. And just last, any specific credit cost guidance you would like to highlight? Though your every ratio is now back to near to pre-COVID 1 DPD and etc. Any specific thing that you want to comment?
Yeah, so same credit cost guidance that we had given for the pre-COVID level, which is around 30 to 50 basis points. So that's what we are comfortable for the coming year.
Okay. Thank you so much, Manoj and the team. All the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Pooja Ahuja from Monarch Networth Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers this quarter. So firstly, I wanted to understand how much is the quantum of restructured book as of March?
28 crores.
28 crores, that is 65 basis points of the overall book.
Okay, and have we seen any slippages from this book during this quarter?
Yes, the slippages have been there. So overall, the slippages are, the real NPA slippage is around 20%.
Okay.
And there's another 5-10% which is in the RBI reclassification.
Okay, all right. Right. And are we holding any excess liquidity in our books as of March, or have we completely run down?
No, we are holding around 650 crores of cash and investments. We will not run down totally. This is our optimal level that we will want to operate at. So we will want to hold about 2 months of liquidity at any given point of time on the balance sheet.
Okay, but as per the regulatory requirement, how much would be the excess? What would be the LCR?
LCR is at 125% and the requirement is 30%. So we are very comfortable on liquidity from all aspects.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that's it from my end.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Karthik Chellappa from Buena Vista Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity again. I just have two questions. The first one is, of the disbursements that we did this year, which is roughly, let's say, about 2,000 odd crores, would you be able to share what is the 1 DPD ratio of that book?
We'll have to get back.
We have to get back out of syllabus question. It won't be much. I mean, it will not be much. It will be a very small number.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Not a problem. The second question is, if I look at the difference between the check bounce rate and the 1 DPD, which is roughly around 9%, that would essentially signify the customers whose checks have bounced, but they have regularized it to not have any due by the end of the reporting period, correct?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, that difference of 9%, if I were to compare it with pre-COVID levels, which is, let's say, the fourth quarter of FY20 or so, there it was about 6-odd%, which means despite most of the asset quality parameters inching towards pre-COVID levels, the difference is still sizable relative to pre-COVID. What do you think explains this?
I think some amount of behavioral changes or disturbance which has been caused by COVID. So, you know, it actually takes time to bring customers to a, you know, very disciplined behavior of clearing the payment on the same date, you know, where they're supposed to clear. But that got completely disturbed because of, you know, 6 months of moratorium and then after that, you know, second wave and so on. So I guess we are basically talking about, you know, 3% or 3-4% of customers who have whose behavior has kind of changed. You know, it's become a bit casual because they feel that, okay, maybe there's no penalty. You know, we can just pay it later, etc. That is one reason. And another reason which is also there is because now there are so many digital modes of payment, you know, UPI, etc., where, you know, they can link other banks. So I guess customers are little more easy in terms of their payment. Because earlier they knew that if the ACH slips, then somebody is going to come and collect cash from them, or, you know, somebody is going to come and knock on their doors. Now they are a little bit more easy because they know that, okay, they just missed a payment, okay, it's going to take them maybe 5 seconds to link another bank and make the payment through another bank. So I think that also is a contributor to about 2-3%, because we are seeing a lot of customers, actually about 3-5% of customers who pay immediately after the bounce rate, which makes no sense at all, because if they had an intention of delaying, they should probably pay after a few days. But, you know, 4th is the presentation date. They bounce on 4th and then they will pay on 5th or 6th or 7th or 8th through UPI or some other electronic method. So I think it's some change in behavior that has taken place through COVID, which is contributing to this.
Which means the 14-15% check bounce rate which we see right now relative to a pre-COVID of 10-11%, at least behaviorally, we should expect this gap to sustain at least for the next few quarters until they become a little more disciplined. Is that how we should infer it?
Yeah, and it will require some effort from our side as well. We'll have to, I mean, and we have started that. We have started understanding why customers are paying 2-3 days after bouncing the payment. And, you know, is it because they have their funds coming into some other account? So should we change the account for the ACH and so on? So all of this kind of repair work is going on. Which will help in getting the number back to the pre-COVID level.
Got it. This is very clear, Manoj. That's all from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we'll get back to you on the OnePlus which has come from the current year.
Yeah, sure. Not a problem.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Just a follow-up on our strategy when we are looking, you know, at entering more into the rural side and deeper geographies. So then what will be the operational changes that we will be making, because we've been hiring MBA graduates and, you know, we've got team-based branches. So then, I mean, you know, to attract such talent. So in the rural geographies, I mean, what would be the strategy for that, for going ahead into this segment?
So in terms of hiring, etc., you know, it's not very different. So as I mentioned, so we last year, I mean, or the previous year, we added about 100 such small locations. And we are still hiring, you know, similar people that we were hiring in the past. Training them and, you know, getting them to operate in these markets. And Now, because of all of this digital penetration and all of these towns developing, there is not that much reluctance that we are seeing of people, wanting to work in these places. There are a lot of people coming from these smaller towns who want to work there in their hometowns or in these small places. So we don't see any difficulty there. In terms of operations, again, because of the digital connectivity, it's not that we have to start or do something different in these places. We are able to provide service from the nearest large branch. We can video counsel the customer from a nearest branch. So even in terms of operation, I know this question has come up a couple of times, even in this call, that are we doing anything different for penetration into smaller towns? It's nothing significant is the answer to that question. Because of the digital connectivity, it's fairly similar to how we have been operating in the past.
So it was more like from the talent pool side perspective, because that's been the challenge for the peers operating in the rural geography, especially wherein handholding is required for the customer. So from that point of view.
Yeah. So, but again, like I said, we are not operating in such very small rural markets where it's difficult for us to get people to go, or the profile of the people that go there in those markets is different. We are operating in fairly large towns. I mean, tier two, tier three towns. Where the profile of employees is similar to the larger metros.
Got it, sir. Oh, thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jigar Jani from Edelweiss Broking Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question and congratulations on a great set of numbers. Just a couple of questions. Would it be possible to give a split of either the quarter or for the full year? How much of the disbursements would be coming from the top five states and how much from the newer states that you have entered into?
Yeah, we can give you that. So top five states for us are basically Gujarat, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, Andhra, Andhra, Telangana, if you take it together, and Karnataka. These are the top five states. I can give you a quick number, which is, just give me 1 minute. So about 70%, 70 to 75% would be coming from the top five states.
Yeah, 300 or so.
Okay, and this mix is likely to remain or this will shift this year? And you will see this newer geographies contributing more because these are fresher branches and will grow at a faster rate.
I think the mix is likely to remain with the slight variation of 5% or so. It's because we are progressing in all of these places, so the mix is likely to be the same.
Sure. And just on the follow-up on the below NPA pool of 44 crores, so like Nutan ma'am mentioned that you can't initiate SSE on these accounts, and probably these accounts will have two or three EMIs that are two EMIs at least pending. So will this be a sticky NPA eventually, because it will be difficult for these people to make these payments, or by when do you see this amount substantially go down? Will it be two quarters, three quarters? That this amount will slow down, because we have seen an addition actually Q on Q basis in this amount. So just your thoughts on that.
I think it will so there will be both events that take place. So one is some of the customers from this 57 crores which is in real NPA will start also making more payments and coming into this lower buckets. And some of the lower bucket customers will get fully resolved. So I think this phenomenon will keep happening, I think, for 6 to 9 months, I would say, before the pool itself starts reducing. It's going to take some time because customers don't have the capability to pay one entire extra installment in a month. you know, they will generally pay 25 or, you know, 50% of the installment. So it will take them, just to make up one installment, it will take them 2-3 months. You know, so if they have 3 installments pending, it is going to take them 9 months.
Yeah, so that's what I was coming to, because you can't initiate surfacely, so eventually it will
also,
be the customer.
You know, again, from a customer perspective, you know, or customer friendliness perspective, it is not the right thing to do, because these customers are actually trying hard to come out of delinquency and, you know, come back to zero. So does not make sense to, you know, take a hard legal action on them. So we will have to handle these customers for, you know, as long as it takes, maybe 6-9 months or 12 months to get them back to zero.
Sure, sure. Thank you very much. Those were all my questions in this.
Thank you very much. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Vishwanathan for closing comments.
Just a moment before we close. So just to respond on Karthik's question on 1 DPD for the newly originated book, Karthik, we are at 0.7% 1 DPD for loans originated in FY22. So I'll hand over to Manoj now.
Thank you everyone for joining us on the call. I hope we have been able to answer all your queries. In case you require any further details, you may get in touch with Manish Kayal, who has the investor relations function, or you can get in touch with Orient Capital, our external investor relations advisor. And thank you so much for this call.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Home First Finance Company India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you.